Welcome to the Lead On Podcast. This is Jeff Orge, the president of Gateway Seminary, talking with you once again about practical issues related to ministry leadership. I paused just for a moment on the intro. I am still the president of Gateway Seminary, but not for long, as we are in the midst of significant transition, both at the seminary and, to our great surprise, in our lives as well, as I'm now the president-elect of the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, and we are tracking toward that new responsibility. One of the questions that some have asked has been, will the podcast continue? And the answer to that is yes. I anticipate continuing the Lead On Podcast and continuing to keep it focused on practical issues related to ministry leadership, and perhaps expanding some of the repertoire of what we talk about, but nevertheless keeping the focus on helping you in your day-to-day work as a ministry leader to be more effective in sharing the gospel, making disciples, and providing the ministries that God is enabling you to do in your communities and around the world. So the podcast will continue, and I will be doing that perhaps in a different way in the future. Now, one of the things that's true about the podcast is that I don't normally try to talk about contemporary events or current events. And the reason for that is because we record these podcasts usually 2 or 3 weeks before they air, just to stay ahead of the game in case I get sick or travel demands or something like that. And so when I record something, it can be a little dated if I try to tie it too much to current events or what's happening in the world today. However, today I'm going to make an exception to that. Today I want to talk about something that happened just a day or two ago that will likely still be in the news in a week or two, but perhaps in a different way. I want to talk about the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. As you know, the large container ship malfunctioned, lost power. We're still not sure of all the details of that, and resulted in a crash into the pier, which held up the bridge, and it fell into the water. Multiple people were killed that were working on the bridge. Cars that were on the bridge plunged into the water. It was a tragedy in every way. What I want to talk about today is ministering in the midst of tragedy. So when that bridge fell and those families were impacted, what would you have done if you had been their pastor? What would you have done if you had been their youth pastor, their ministry leader, their chaplain, the person they looked to for spiritual direction? How do you respond in the midst of tragedy? And how do you provide effective ministry in the midst of this kind of circumstance? So let's talk about that today on the podcast. Well, setting the stage by referencing this bridge that collapsed is just one kind of tragedy that can happen. And of course, another kind would be like natural disasters. A tornado sweeps through your community, or flooding happens in your city. Maybe if you live on the coast, a hurricane blows away your church building and all things connected. Natural disasters can be one form of tragedy. Another form can be, like I mentioned about the bridge, man-made disasters, where something occurs as a result of a malfunction of a machine or a malfunction of a plan or something that went wrong that people had put into motion. And then there are more personal tragedies that happen in the lives of people. I think about some of these that have happened in my lifetime as a ministry leader. I think back to early days when I was first starting out in pastoral ministry. We had a tragic situation in our church where a person, a woman, gave birth to twins, and they were both stillborn. This is so rare, so unusual. But the crisis that occurred right at the end of the pregnancy cost both these children their lives. It was a horrific blow to our church, and not only to the family involved, particularly to the couple, but the whole church grieved because of this event that took place in our congregation. And then I think of another one a little later on in pastoral ministry, living in a community where we were involved significantly in the youth sports programs. A thunderstorm came through town. Everyone went off the field as directed, waited for 30 minutes until all the storm was passed out of the area. and then decided to, you know, go back on the field and resume the practice. When they did that, there was one last lightning bolt that happened, and it struck in such a way that it struck multiple children that were running onto the field for this follow-up practice. And some of them were seriously injured, and recovery was long and slow. That was a tragic accident in our community. I think of another one. I was a pastor again in a community where there was a school bus accident. And I won't go into the details. They're just too gruesome to describe. But the school bus was hit by a large piece of farm equipment that was being towed on a very large truck. And because of the angles and the way this happened, the carnage was really awful. And what happened was almost unspeakable. So I've lived through, as a ministry leader, these kinds of tragedies. Natural disasters, man-made or man-caused disasters, and then personal tragedies like loss of children, accidents in communities, things like the lightning strike that decimated a team. These kinds of things happen. And as a ministry leader, you're expected to, and frankly, have a likely strong desire to step up and provide ministry in these contexts. So today, I want to talk about two overarching principles about ministering in tragedy, and then I want to give you about seven steps to take to help people go through a process of recovery when one of these things happens. So first, two big principles. The first big principle is this: show up. Your physical presence is significant, vital, dramatic. Show up. If it's a natural disaster, go where the disaster has occurred. If it's a man-made disaster, get there. If it's a personal tragedy, go. This is not the time for a phone call. This is not the time for a text message. This is the time for you to get in your car, get on a plane, get yourself physically in the midst of these tragic circumstances. Now, I've covered this on other podcasts, but this fact of pastoral presence is powerful because you represent God. You represent the incarnational presence of Jesus. You are a vehicle through which the Holy Spirit is working. You represent the particular church or ministry with which you're affiliated. Show up. There's not anything that replaces your physical presence in one of these moments. I was reminded of this again yesterday. I received a handwritten card from a person whose memorial service for his spouse, his wife, I had recently attended. I made that effort to attend. I made some effort to attend that service. And when he wrote me the card, he said, when you walked in the room, I was overwhelmed with gratitude that you came. Now, listen, I didn't speak at the service. I only talked to this person for just a few minutes. There were lots of other people there. It wasn't appropriate for me to dominate the moment. I came in, I expressed my concern, my condolences, communicated my love by my presence, and stepped back into the shadows. And yet I got a handwritten card thanking me for my presence. There is nothing more important in the midst of personal tragedy, natural disaster, man-made crisis. There's not anything more important for a ministry leader than to show up. Do you remember a few years ago when Katrina happened? President Bush made a trip there, but decided not to land the plane because of all of the difficulty of putting Air Force One down in any situation, all of the personnel that it draws from law enforcement, from medical community, from the resources of first responders. Everything has to be reordered to protect the president while he's on the ground. And the president said he didn't really want to do that. He didn't want to draw resources away from the recovery effort, so he didn't show up. He just circled in the plane. And if you remember this, he was criticized strongly by people who said he didn't care enough to come. Well, he did care enough to come. He cared so much that he didn't want to draw resources away. But the impression was he didn't really care. I learned a lot from that example. I learned that no matter how rational or how logical your response, in the midst of personal tragedy, natural disaster, man-made crisis, in the midst of these things, what people want most and what they need most from their leaders is someone who will show up. So get there. Not a phone call, not a text message. Get there. Get in your car and go. Get on a plane and fly. Be there. Show up. It's the first and most important principle of responding in tragedy. Now the second principle. Before I say this, I want you to know that I'm going to be in trouble with my wife if she hears this podcast. My wife does not like what I'm about to say. She doesn't like it when I say it. She would not allow our children to say it to each other or to anyone else. She does not like this. So I'm going to take a big risk here and say this and know that when she hears the podcast, I'm going to get a talking to, but here it is. I'm going to say it this way because I like this alliteration. I want to shock you a little bit. I want to smack you just a bit upside the head and make you pay attention. Are you ready? The first principle is show up. The second principle, shut up. Yes, those are those words that my wife doesn't like for me to say. Shut up. What I mean by this is, when you show up in a tragedy situation, do not feel obligated to run your mouth endlessly saying things that are not all that helpful out of your own nervousness or insecurity, babbling on in ways that are just simply not helpful. Now, in just a moment, I'm going to talk about some things you can say that are helpful. But many people say, well, I don't want to go to the tragic situation because I won't know what to say. Well, let me tell you, I never know what to say either. I make my living with words. I preach constantly. I do this podcast every week. I've written a bunch of books. I write a blog every week. I make my living with words. And I will frankly, honestly, and transparently tell you, when I show up in a tragedy situation, I don't know what to say either. But what I've learned is to say a lot less than I used to say. Especially avoid saying things that just simply aren't helpful. You go into a situation where a child has died and you say, well, God must have wanted this little angel in heaven more than we needed him here. That is ridiculous, outrageous, theologically flawed, and ministerially unhelpful. Don't say things like that. It's better to sit there silently than to say things that are doing more harm than good. So, what are these two big overarching principles of ministering during tragedy? Show up and shut up. Show up. Your presence speaks volumes. And then I do want you to speak up. I do want you to say some right things and some good things and some helpful things, but I want you to avoid the pressure to feel that you have to babble on with some insightful, wise word that's just going to fix the situation. That isn't possible. And quite frankly, when you try to do it, you reveal several things about yourself, your own insecurity, your own immaturity, and your own lack of spiritual insight and ministerial capacity. So just limit the words and think very carefully about what you're saying and why, and make sure that what does come out of your mouth is words that are true and helpful and that are going to give a person real capacity to move forward, not just this mindless babbling that goes on in these contexts. So we want to show up and we want to, you know what I'm going to say, shut up. We want to limit all the stuff that's coming out of our mouths. And recognize that it's not so important that we know what to say as it is that we show up in the moment. Now, having said those two big overarching principles, let me give you some things to remember as you're carrying forward ministry in the situation. Number one, patiently lead people to face the reality of their situation. When you go into a tragedy people will be in shock. And you may be the one who says, let's start thinking about what's really happening here. And helping them to face reality, face the implications of that reality, and start thinking through what it means to go forward from that moment. This is delicate work that involves careful conversation to lead people to face the reality of their situation and to start moving forward. For example, to say, this situation with the death of your child is tragic. I know it's very difficult right now, but let's think about some next steps. Would you like to start thinking about when we could have a memorial service to honor this life and what it's meant to you? And the person may say, I can't even think about that right now. And your response is, I understand that. Let's give it a day and we'll come back to that issue. Have you thought about who else you need to call and inform about this? Your parents, just extended family. Do you have a plan to put that in place? Or can I help you do that? These are the kinds of gentle proddings that people often need in the midst of tragedy to think about what to do next. A person is involved with a natural disaster like a tornado or a hurricane. They're sitting in the rubble of their lives. The first thing is not, some spiritual statement about God and letting this happen for their good, okay? A better first statement would be, let's talk about what needs to happen right now. Do you know where the rest of your family members are, and can I help you find them? If we do know where they are, let's think about where we can go that you can be safe. Let's talk about basic things like food and water. Let's think about how to move forward by facing the reality of the situation and taking some initial steps to go in the right direction. A second thing to do is to give space for grieving, no cliches, and recognize the wide scope of response you may have. For example, as I've taught you before, grief often involves shock, anger, denial, and so when a person is lashing out in anger about what's happened, don't overreact to that. Recognize they're not lashing out at you or even necessarily lashing out at the situation. They're just lashing out because of the great grief they feel in the context of the loss they've experienced. Give space for grieving and even to encourage it by saying, listen, I know you're angry right now. Why don't you tell me about that? You seem to be having some difficulty with even accepting what's happened. You don't have to say it this way, but that's called denial. How can I help you to think through what's happened and come to grips with the reality of your situation? Give space for grieving, patiently leading people to face the reality of their situation, and recognize the wide range of response you may get in these circumstances. A third thing to do is to help people put aside other issues and focus on what really matters. Now, this requires, again, careful leadership, because what really matters to most people in these situations is immediate survival. And that's important. And it may be that you focus on food or on safety and food and water and getting the person to a place where of immediate stability. But then you have to take another step and think about, okay, now let's focus on, what really matters here in this situation. Not what have you lost, but what really matters is that you're safe, that your family's safe, that we have a plan to find family members that maybe aren't here or don't know about what's happening, that we have a way to communicate that to other people, and that's enough for today. That's enough for today. Let's take this one step at a time, focusing on what really matters right now in the moment, and see if we can make some steps forward on that. Number four, focus on meeting the needs of the hurting person, not your own needs or even the expectations of the community. Now, I'll give you one example of this from many years ago in my pastoral ministry, and it goes back to that example I told you about the family in our church that had the twins that were lost, that died at birth. This was a horrific moment. We weren't a large church, so everyone knew about the situation. It was devastating for the couple, particularly, as you might imagine, overwhelming for the woman, the mother, and then the extended family, and then all the friends in our church. This was a horrific moment. And I was a young pastor who had never been through anything like this. And I knew, even in those days, the best thing I could do was show up. And so I did. I was almost at a loss to know what to do after that. But in God's mysterious providence, I had in my first church an older associate pastor. And when this circumstance happened, he told me that many years before, when he was a young man, a very similar thing had happened to his wife and to him. I didn't even know that story. It was a distant memory for them, something they had been through, healed from, and moved on. But now, with this circumstance happening right in front of our eyes, it brought it all back to him, and he shared with me what he'd been through. And one of the good ministry decisions I made back in those days, I said, "Would you take the lead on caring for this family?" You say, "But you were the pastor." Yes, I was the pastor. And in that moment, it was my responsibility to provide the best ministry possible to this hurting family, not to meet my own needs, satisfy my own ego, step in and say, "I'm the pastor and I'll take care of this." No, it was my job to step a little bit to the side and say, "Hey, listen, would you take the lead on caring for this family?" And so he did. He stepped up. He provided ministry. They shared some of their story. That immediately engendered an emotional connection. I saw that principle from the Bible lived out, that God allows us to go through some things so that we can bring comfort to others. And then they asked this associate if he would lead the memorial service. You might think, "But you were the pastor. They should have asked you." No, no. It's not about me. It's not about my role or my office or my being in charge. It's about ministry to the family and what they need in the midst of tragedy. And in this particular case, this associate was much more emotionally connected, much more relationally experienced, and much more capable of offering the ministry that was needed in the moment. And so we switched roles, and I became his assistant. I remember going to the service and standing over to the side while he stood up and spoke and led through the worship and the prayers and all the aspects of it. And I remember thinking how right and good it was for him to be in that leadership role in that moment, because he was the one who could provide the best ministry. Listen, in tragedy, you may show up and you may shut up, meaning you don't say too much. You may do all these other things I'm describing, and you may do them very well, but don't let it be about you. If someone else in the situation can provide better ministry, more meaningful ministry, or can in some way step up and do what's right in the moment, let them. And more than that, encourage them. Facilitate it. Make it happen. Well, next. The next thing to remember when you're helping people through tragedy is to use the Bible appropriately to give strength. The Bible has passages which are popular, familiar, for a reason. They're powerful. The 23rd Psalm is so powerful, so meaningful, so beautiful. You say, "Yeah, but everybody's heard that." Well, that doesn't mean it's still not useful in a tragedy or crisis situation. And to be able to say to someone, "I know you're hurting, and when I'm hurting, I find that if I turn to God's word, it gives me strength, gives me comfort, it keeps me going." Let's look at the Bible just for a moment. You may remember the 23rd Psalm. It's very familiar to a lot of folks. Let's just read that again together. "The Lord is my shepherd." You walk a person through those simple, familiar passage, and it ministers deeply to them. Especially during times of tragedy or crisis, don't be afraid of using the familiar. Don't be afraid of using the familiar. I learned this early on in pastoral ministry. I don't need 40 funeral sermons. I just need two or three. And when I stand up to speak at a memorial service or a funeral service, I'm not worried about being innovative or creative or new. I'm focusing on familiar, timeless, truth that really does encourage us, transform us, comfort us. And so when you are in the midst of a tragic situation, don't feel like you have to come up with some Bible verse nobody's ever heard of or some insight that no one's ever thought about before. Go to the familiar. Go to the familiar passages like Psalm 23, like the passages in Corinthians that talk about being comforted, that we might learn to comfort others, like Romans, which says that all things work together for good. Go to these familiar passages of Scripture and let people draw strength from the familiar in those moments. Well, a couple of more ideas. When you're ministering in the midst of tragedy, you have to be aware of many people who are impacted and minister accordingly. Going back to the bridge illustration at the beginning of the podcast, when that bridge fell into the water, of course, those workers that were on the bridge, their lives were either lost or they were seriously injured, and the people that were driving on the bridge, some of them were killed as well. That's the immediate people who received the immediate ministry, but spiraling out from that, think about the other people who are going to be impacted by this tragedy. First responders and people who were on the scene helping, and the grief that's going to result from their being a part of that and the frustration they feel of not being able to find the victims or recover the bodies, all of those people are going to need ministry going forward. And then think about the people who are impacted by this. This is going to have a tremendous economic impact. People are going to lose jobs because that bridge collapsed. People are going to have marital strife because their finances are in disarray and they're not going to be able to take care of their bills. People are going to be frustrated with children not being able to travel to see parents or to see in divorce situations or other things. They can't cross that bridge and get to their family. You have to think through all the different implications of something like this and recognize that there are many people who are impacted in a tragedy situation besides just the one who's immediately sitting before you who may be the focus of what's happened. So yes, back to that bus accident back in the day, certainly the children, they were impacted. Certainly the families of those who were killed or injured were impacted. But what about the people that were driving the truck that was hauling the equipment? What about the first responders who came and saw the carnage after the accident? What about all of the people that spill out from that in the schools where these children attended who had to see that empty desk the following week? I'm just simply saying there's cascading, rippling effect from tragedy like this. And a ministry leader recognizes that not just the person sitting in front of them who's directly impacted needs ministry, but so does the larger community. And that leads me to the last thing. And that is to think about the long-term impact of a tragedy like this and the ongoing ministry needs that are present. Going back to that lightning strike situation that we had many years ago, when the lightning bolt hit, it hit so hard that it threw children through the air and just scattered them around with different injuries. Well, some of those children recovered pretty quickly, even by the afternoon. Some spent one night in the hospital and were fine. But there was one little boy who had some serious injury. This lightning strike really messed up his nerve system. He had to learn how to walk all over again. He had to learn how to talk all over again. This is a 10, 11-year-old boy. And I watched his family walk through this over the next several years and tried to provide ministry and support for them every time I was with them, because I recognized that while the tragedy happened and there was a huge outpouring of community support in the moment, the tragedy for this family didn't end in a day or a week. It carried on for years. And so, as you're providing ministry, keep in mind that some of this is going to be a long-term plan that you have to put into place to provide the pastoral care and support needed to recover from tragedy over a longer period of time. Well, today on the podcast, we've been talking about ministering in times of tragedy, and I've talked about ministering when there's a natural disaster or a man-made crisis or even a personal issue that happens to an individual in your church family or in your community. When tragedy strikes, show up. And measure your words carefully. Don't babble on. But in the midst of that, put into practice some of these principles I've laid out today. And in doing so, you will find yourself offering the kind of love and support and care needed in tragic situations. This requires courage, sensitivity, and a commitment to meeting the need of people in the midst of their pain and often in the midst of yours. But you can do it as you put these principles into practice and you lead on.